So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's a feast day of St. Andrew, and he has something to teach us about the significance that can occur when we extend an invitation to someone, as well as talking about Jesus. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Joining me a little later on will be Melanie Hemp. She's the founder of Screen Strong, and she's also the author of The Screen Strong Solution, How to Free Your Child from Addictive Screen Habits. We are going to talk about taking back your kids from the digital world and freeing your child from addictive screen habits. Let's be real, we struggle with screen time, so do kids. So let someone know that this is what we're talking about. I know a lot of moms and dads who could use the help of this great resource, screenstrong.com. Melanie Hemp will be joining us in just a little bit. And I hope that you will be like many of the other parents who worked with Melanie Hemp who have said, we got our family back. We got our son back, our daughter back, whether it was an 8-year-old who was addicted to the Wii or a 15-year-old girl who was struggling with overuse of social media and anxiety, or a 17-year-old getting ready to go off to college who had been addicted to video games. That's what we're talking about today on Trending. So let other parents know that that's what we're discussing. We're also going to continue the theme of hope. In this season of Advent, we're in the first week of Advent, that first Advent candle representing hope as we talked about today. And we'll be talking about this theme even more so, and the significance of us being pilgrims and not just looking around at the world and thinking, well, this is all life is. We'll go deeper on that and the importance of having hope in our lives and how it's not just blind optimism, that it's not chance. It's not even just luck. We'll talk about that and more here today on Trending. You're listening to Trending with Timory. First, I want to also remind you that coming up, we're going to be hearing the major case going before the Supreme Court. Oral arguments begin tomorrow in the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health case. Now, I'll talk about this more tomorrow. I'll give you more of an update. It's a unique case, and some people believe that this may be the case where we will see Roe versus Wade overturned and the decision of abortion therefore returning to the states, which would mean the current law on the state books would be, whatever it may be on abortion, this may be a law that's even 60, 70 years old predating Roe versus Wade that is pro-life, or one that's been passed more recently that is pro-abortion. That would be the law of the land until other states and other laws are passed to regulate it. I want to encourage you in the meantime to please pray for those who are presenting before the Supreme Court, especially for our Supreme Court justices, our 9 justices. Pray for them. Continue to join us here at Relevant Radio praying for them. John Roberts, Clarence Thomas, Stephen Breyer, Thomas Alito, Sandra Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Barrett. God bless, keep them, strengthen them in this decision, help them to have peace, clarity, to seek truth, and also to seek the truth of natural law written into the hearts, minds, and bodies of all of those people who their Supreme Court decisions will affect. I'll give you more information tomorrow on the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health case, but in the meantime, please join me in praying for these Supreme Court justices. It's the feast day of St. Andrew the Apostle, and I always like to look at the life of the saint and often dive a little bit more so into what they said, what they wrote. Now, one of the challenges sometimes when we look to what the apostles have said and done is we don't always have writings just from the apostles. I mean, we have writings from Matthew, we have writings from John and Peter, but Andrew's one of them where you might think, okay, here's the church celebrating this feast day. It's right smack at the beginning of Advent this year, November 30th. And you might be wondering, one, how do we celebrate a feast day? And two, what's significant about St. Andrew other than the fact that we recognize that he is indeed one of the 12 apostles? Well, I think that first, whenever we're confused as to what to do when it comes to a saint's feast day, it's important that we read some of what they wrote or about their life. For me, I don't really think reading just about their life is enough, the short synopsis. We need to pray to this saint, ask the saint's intercession. Today, that's Saint Andrew, the brother of Saint Peter, our first pope. Ways you can celebrate a feast day vary from going to Mass, reading the Bible, specifically about the saint in the New Testament, and again, praying to them. But what's significant about St. Andrew? Well, we know that he's a fisherman. He was a disciple of John before he was a disciple of Christ. One thing that I think is very important as I look through a lot of the stories of St. Andrew in sacred scripture, he always seems to be making introductions and invitations for people. Three of the most well-known stories of St. Andrew in sacred scripture center around these introductions and invitations. We know first, if we look to the gospel according to John, that it's indeed Andrew who first introduces Simon, renamed Peter, our first pope, to our Lord. And that introduction changed St. Peter's life. We also know that it's Andrew who actually brings the boy with the loaves and the fishes to Jesus when he's about to perform the miracle of the loaves and fishes. Yet again, introducing someone to Christ and allowing someone to participate in the life-giving work of Christ for a moment there. We also read in John chapter 12 that it's the Greeks, not the Jews, the Greeks who came to Philip and Andrew for an invitation to meet Jesus. They wanted Andrew to introduce them. Now, what does this all say about Andrew? It means that he was someone who was approachable, trustworthy, dependable, and credible. And I think that this is something that we need to remember when we ponder evangelization in 2021. We tend to think that, well, if I just have the right argument, if I speak eloquently enough. But if you notice, all the people that Andrew brought to Jesus or his brother, a boy with loaves and fishes, Greeks who he probably didn't even know, who wanted to know Jesus. And what made it so that they went to him? Well, obviously he was someone who was approachable, given that the Greeks turned to Andrew in the first place. But also he must have been someone trustworthy for his own brother, his older brother, we have to remember, to listen to his younger brother and then go and follow him to meet Jesus. He had to be someone who was dependable. If he's saying that you should meet this person, well, there's something significant about this. There's something credible about what he has to say. This is a reminder for all of us as to the importance of having these qualities, approachability, trustworthiness, being dependable, and being credible. All of this has to do with our character, who we are, the example we set. I think that this is what stands out the most to me about St. Andrew today on his feast day. We're all called to be evangelists. We're all called to do so by the example we set. Not everyone is going to make sound, perfect, or eloquent arguments for Jesus Christ, but what you can do is invite others. Talk to them about Jesus. This is what St. Andrew did to his brother Peter, and it just changed his life. How simple is that? Yet for some reason, we tend to become nervous about even saying the name Jesus or inviting others to church or anything for that matter. We have to open ourselves up in the way that Andrew did, because think about it, at the time, Andrew probably sounded crazy walking up to Peter, who also was a Jew and who was also expecting the Messiah. But here Andrew is talking about how the Messiah is here. Peter had to have been thinking at first that his brother was absolutely insane. But there was something in his credibility, his dependability, his trustworthiness, and how approachable Andrew was, his honesty that led Peter to be drawn to Christ through an introduction by his brother Andrew. The question for us is, who are we willing to introduce to Christ? Who are we willing, even when it might sound awkward or maybe even sound crazy, talking a different faith-filled language in a secular 21st century? Are we willing to break through that? Are we willing to break through and proclaim the name of Christ? St. Andrew, pray for us. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri here on Relevant Radio. I am very excited to start my next conversation with Melanie Hemp. Now, Melanie Hemp has done incredible work starting an organization. She's the founder of what's known as Screen Strong, helping to take back your kids from the digital world. She recently wrote a book, and that book came out just before COVID hit. It's called Screen Strong Solution: How to Free Your Child from Addictive Screen Habits. Maybe you're listening and you're tired of fighting with your kid over technology. You're sick of giving in just because of their moodiness, their crying, their anxiety, whatever it might be. You want them to fit in. We're going to talk about all of this, keeping up with the Joneses, keeping up with technology, but how to keep home safe, healthy, and together. Many people have shared their testimonies, which I know Melanie will share, about families who have come back together in incredible ways after the damage done by unwholesome technology use. So if you know someone who needs this, please invite them to listen. They can catch the podcast later. But Melanie, welcome to Trending.
Thank you. I am so happy to be here.
I'd like to start by discussing a little bit about how your own family story actually inspired your work with Screen Strong and even writing your book, Screen Strong Solution. Can you share with us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a registered nurse. I'm retired now, but I thought I knew what I was doing in this whole area. I have four children, my husband and I, and my oldest son became addicted to video games right under my nose. I had no idea what was happening. He had straight A's, so I thought we were fine, but he went to college and dropped out his first year. And that is when we all got our wake-up call on this. He dropped out because he played video games in his dorm. And his story is very, very common. There are so many boys, especially boys, that drop out of college due to their gaming addiction because it's the first time they're away from home and they don't have, you know, mom there and dad there setting limits and setting the kitchen timer. So we had a lot of stress during the high school years with Adam. He, like I said, had really good grades, but we were very confused by that because we had a lot of conflict in our home. And so we couldn't wait for him to go away to school. He went to school, and then, of course, he ended up dropping out. And so as a result of that whole thing that happened in our life, we started Screen Strong in order to educate other parents about this. And I immediately started doing a whole lot of research using my nursing background, traveling all over the country, going to conferences, and learning all about screen addiction. And back then, 8 or 9 years ago, you know, it was sort of a bad word to say video game addiction, but now everybody knows what that is. So as a result of that experience, our other three children, our younger three, we really changed the tune in our house. We ended up taking all the video games away, and I have two younger boys, and they have done just fine. They are 17 years old now. They have grown up in a game-free home. My daughter did not have social media. She did not have a smartphone until she went to college. She just graduated from college. She did just fine. And the boys also don't have a smartphone. They have a talk text phone. We've found a few that work, and they are thriving. Yes, they have those still, but you might have to go look on our website because they're really hard to find.
I want one. I wish I could.
Yes, I do too.
We can't go back anymore sometimes because of the various things we do on work as adults. It's like, oh, what do you do?
I know, but you can still put most of it back on your laptop, right? So
true.
So as a result of Adam's story, I learned so much about brain development and what screens are doing to our kids' brains and everything that we have on our website and the new course that we have coming out this week. Everything is really rooted in science and not in just parenting opinions out there, because you will hear a lot of those. And I did. Let me tell you, when Adam was in high school, all my friends said, well, this is the way it's going to be. This is the way of the future. This is, you know, you don't have any choice but to let him play these video games. And after all, Melanie, he is, you know, not getting in trouble. He's not drinking. He's not dating. Right. He didn't even want to drive
a car. People will say, hey, I'd rather my kid be at home where I can see them interacting, communicating, watching what they're doing than being out somewhere else. It's one of the most common arguments I'll hear.
Yeah. But the problem with that is that they are not really communicating. They are not really building their social skills. And that is probably the biggest difference and the biggest myth, I think, if I could just tell parents, if you take this stuff away, and I mean take it away. I mean, take it out of your house because it just doesn't work. They're going to have the rest of their life to be on all this technology. And I know it just sounds crazy. I mean, honestly, I have some people ask me, you know, well, do you have a cow in your backyard? I'm like, no. In fact, we have to. We have a TV in the house.
Do you homeschool? Do you no. only talk about Jesus? You know, we assume yeah. how you probably dress as well.
Yes. Isn't that crazy? And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I've done this rodeo and I'm not doing it again. And so our younger boys have so many friends and their social skills are way ahead of where my oldest was when they were their age and when he was their age. And so there's all these myths over the years that I have learned just aren't true. Dealing with hundreds and hundreds of families, same story all over the world. It's not just in the United States. We have families all over the world that we work with, and it is the same thing. My son or my daughter has meltdowns when we take the screens away, or their use is increasing over time, or it's the only thing that puts them in a good mood. What am I going to do? It's my only negotiating tool for them to do their homework. Maybe their kids are sneaking around and lying about their screen time. They're getting their parents' passwords. You know, I say to parents, don't ever let your kids have something that causes them to lie to you. I mean, there's right. nothing like the laptop and the phone that does that. Using screen time as an escape is another warning sign. The biggest warning sign is when parents have a gut feeling, and I will say mostly moms get this gut feeling that something isn't right and they are losing their kids. And I think that's the biggest warning sign is when you feel like your child's screen time is affecting the relationship with you, with their teachers, with, you know, other extended family members, when they love their screens more than they love school, that is a big problem. And parents know in their deep, deep heart, they understand and they know they just don't understand the reason why. And so ScreenStrong's main objective is to educate parents so they understand, you know, the science, I mean, the way our bodies are made. There are reasons for all of these things, reasons for this attachment that is so important with your kids. I think that we somehow have lost our footing when we think that screens are more important than spending time with our kids.
And fitting in, keeping up with the technology, everyone else has it, using it as a means of communication. All of these are common arguments that you hear people make, and we'll touch on some of those. But I want to just like share one of the awesome testimonies that's in your book, Screen Strong Solutions. It's a pretty short book. It's meant to be a resource for you as parents. I remember a mom of three boys from Charlotte, North Carolina, commented about how her 8-year-old boy, who is addicted to using the Wii and computer games, they took it away cold turkey, and the 8-year-old kid's first response was, "You took away the one thing that I love." And I mean, just that alone should tell us something. But she then went on to share how her child started reading and reading more and tackling the trilogy of the Lord of the Rings and fencing and going outdoors and trying out baseball. And I think one of the best parts is the kid even recognized it and thanked his mom for saving him from the path he was going down. So let's talk a little bit about screens, short and long-term problems for kids. Tell us about the brain science behind screen usage that seems to be so normal for most youth today.
Right. So basically the brain science is that their brains, you know, the human brain takes 25 years for the frontal cortex to develop. So there's just a couple things I think it's really important for parents to understand. That is the first thing. I remember one of the first workshops I ever did, which, by the way, when I first started doing this, I thought, oh, maybe a few people have trouble. So I thought, okay, I will put a little flyer up at school and maybe run off 20 handouts. Do you know we had 125 people come? It was crazy. Wow. There's so many people that are struggling with this. But the first thing is that kids are not little adults. So we really hurt our kids when we treat them like adults. So for 25 years, that executive function center just is not going to be fully connected. And, you know, in the old days, right, 10 years ago, in the old days, I'll say 20 years ago, it didn't matter so much. But now that we have so much technology, that is a very key point. Because that executive function center is not fully connected, your child has trouble controlling their impulses. They have trouble controlling their patience level. They are risky. They take, you know, a lot of risk, especially around their peers on social media. The other thing is intelligence is not maturity. And this, if you just hear one thing tonight, just remember, write this down. Intelligence is not maturity. Our kids are smart. And I really fell for this one. Boy, did I fall for it. My son was so smart. And I thought he was mature because he was smart. That has nothing to do with your child's intelligence. And boy, if I had known.
Moderate their behavior.
No, they cannot moderate their behavior. And the reason why they can't moderate it is because the next thing about the science, and that is the persuasive design. The persuasive design today is so powerful. I mean, you and I are fully grown people, and we can't even control our time on the screen unless we leave it in the car or leave it upstairs. I have to shut my laptop and walk out of the room.
I have to lock it in a drawer upstairs to make sure I don't check it occasionally, even for the timer. Wait, did I hear my phone vibrating?
Yes. You can imagine for a brain that's all, you know, we call it all accelerator and no brakes. That's where your teenager is. And the thing that's going to catch parents the most, their fourth, fifth, sixth grade child, they think, oh, they're really more mature than, I hear this all the time, they're more mature than ever, all their friends.
But right, let me tell right.
You know, it, by the time they hit puberty, there is this neuronal pruning that happens in their brain. There's so much reorganization that's happening. And
they're
hit puberty.
They're struggling through understanding the full concept of how a phone can work. We're going to talk more about the science behind technology use, taking back your kids from the digital world, and freeing them from addictive screen habits with Melanie Hemp from Screen Strong here on Trending. Don't go away. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Parents, listen up. This is a resource for you. ScreenStrong.com. Melanie Hemp is the founder. She's also the author of the book, Screen Strong Solution, How to Free Your Child from Addictive Screen Habits. There will be links on social media now if you'd like to find those. Find me at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, where we've also tagged her organization. And you can find them in the show notes at relevantradio.com/trending. Let's talk about taking kids back from the digital world. It's enough. It's destroying families, to destroying the future from college to jobs to struggling with pornography addictions. You name it. Let's free those kids from addictive screen habits. We're unpacking some of the science behind addictive screen usage. I want to touch just a little bit more on what's happening at the high school level with Melanie Hemp, and then we'll talk about solutions and things that can be done and even addressing common arguments. So, Melanie, let's talk a little bit more. We left off discussing teen usage and how they cannot regulate the use of technology. And it's not just that the prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed, allowing for reason, but you were sharing some of the other elements.
Right. They have very high novelty seeking brains. And so you and I, all adults, you know, we all are very interested in new things and novel things. But when you're a teenager, you're at your peak. The other thing that you're at your peak is rejection pain. You are at the highest, you will feel the worst pain around the age of 15 than you will any other time of your life. And this is when we give kids social media and they are rejected every single day. My daughter didn't grow up with, 15-year-old girls. My daughter did not grow up with social media. We did not after everything happened with our oldest son, we decided I'm not going to do the same experiment on her. That experiment failed. So we did another experiment and we gave her a talk text only phone. And you know what people say, wasn't she left out of all of her friends and whatnot? And let me tell you, she was not left out. She was not left out at all. And if she was, by some reason, she never knew about it. So it was just fabulous. It was the best thing we ever did, raising her without a smartphone. And I know that makes people just kind of their head spin, right? Because they think, well, today you have to have smartphones. No, you do not. You can have a laptop in school. She did her homework. We are not anti-screen, but we are against the screens that are hurting our kids and that are toxic. And those three things are video games, social media, and pornography. And along just with the science, to wrap up the science, the adolescent years are the most impressionable years. And what we now know about adolescence is that teenagers are not as resilient as we once thought they were. When they are traumatized during these years, there are permanent changes that happen in their brain. And that's really scary. We didn't even have this research 15 years ago, but we know, just like all adult addictions, or 90%, okay, not all, 90% of adult addictions start in the teenage years. This is how important this is to get this right with your kids. So our solutions, right, are to delay and pause and be okay with being different and realizing that being different for 48 months of high school is really easy. It's a lot easier than arguing with your kids for 48 months about their screen time.
And just to emphasize how important this is, when you just talked about how latest research shows that teens are not as resilient as we believe, that they are experiencing a lot of trauma and forming addictions at this age range. You know, I'm thinking about everything from a teenager who experiences severe criticism of her appearance to one who is engaged in things such as sexting via text message and has regret, resentment, and is trying to understand what she's done, make up for what she's done. And now she continues in this habit because it's become a norm, even though it's not what she wants, but she has trauma from it because she's been exposed to it at such a young age.
And it's very stressful.
And people who experience trauma tend to continue to act out what's happened to them. And I mean, we could dive into pornography, all of it. So what you said is so important. And I love where you're pointing to the solutions, those three things: delay, pause, and be okay with being different. So let's get into some more of the solutions. What do parents need to do to get started to take their kids back?
Right, to get their kids back. So, you know, COVID has really been interesting in that it's taken me off the road. I've been traveling for years with this. And because of COVID, I guess I can say thank you for that time that it gave me to put all this information in a course that releases this week. So if you go to screenstrong.com, we have a new parent course that we are so excited about because it is so important that you get the information and the education before you can really make a change, because you won't know why. You have to know why, because it's tough. So the older your kids are, the harder it is, of course, to take things away. If they're young, hey, you just keep delaying it, right? It's really easy. But we have a Facebook group where parents get in there. We have thousands of parents in there, and we all help each other troubleshoot the steps. So we have steps to do this. We have a 7-day challenge and we have a 30-day challenge. And we actually will walk you through how to remove the screens and how to, I'm laughing because it sounds so silly almost, you know, like, okay, we need a 7-step program to do this.
But there's a withdrawal that occurs.
There is. Absolutely. And they go through a grieving process, just like you lose a loved one. It's like they're losing their most prized possession. And so what you're trying to do is pour on the family connection time. You're trying to replace what they've been doing on their screen with real life fun hobbies. We have lists and we help you with all this. And you're just trying to get your child from the virtual world back into the real world, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, Melanie, your kids are living in a bubble. And I say, well, actually, your kids are living in a bubble if they're on screens all the time, because the real world is where it's happening, and this is not a bubble. So our boys, for example, they don't have a smartphone. They do have a phone that they can call their friends and they can text.
They're 17. For those, they're 17.
In fact, they told me, I know it's kind of hard to believe, but they told me recently they don't even want a smartphone in college because they love their freedom.
Awesome.
And doesn't that just say it all?
What does it mean when they say that? Like, what does that mean for your 17-year-old boys to have not grown up with smartphones and to not want one going into college because they want their freedom?
Yeah. They want their freedom. They see all their friends. They see what's happening with all their friends. They're like, Mom, they don't play, you know, tennis anymore. They don't play their guitar anymore. They don't play the piano anymore. And they don't have time. And so our boys have learned the value of time and how you spend your time. And so as a result of the 10,000 hours, which is the average number of hours that a child will spend on a screen from sixth grade to the time they go to college, crazy, I know. But with that time, they have pursued other things, including music. And, you know, we're not musical. I don't ever play the piano, but they do. And they have learned how to play the piano and the violin and the guitar. They play sports. They play sports year round, baseball and basketball. They have all sorts of clubs. One of them just started a chess club at school this year. They're very, very involved in our community and with their friends. We have parties at our house all the time. I'm constantly feeding 17-year-old boys in my house. It is like the greatest thing. I can't even explain. And this is what happens when people kind of sign up for Screen Strong, right? They're like, oh my gosh, I will never go back.
It's more FaceTime and less FaceTime, right? Everyone's using FaceTime on the iPhones today. Yeah. You know, I want to dive in as you're talking about this to hear, you know, teenage boys saying they don't want a cell phone. It's more freeing. They understand the value of time. They understand the value of liberty, of self-moderation, of self-control. And they're learning those skills so that one day, let's say when they do have a smartphone, they've learned the difference. They know what they want. And they'll be in a mental headspace with far more maturity to have better moderation. I mean, let's be honest. I've seen so many adults in my own life who have started with moderation and led to absolutely no moderation. People who think they're not addicted to their phones who are. I mean, I raise my hand as being someone who struggles here and there, and I've tried for years putting timers and blocking certain websites and apps after X so many minutes. You know, I don't have any notifications or I don't have any social, I didn't have any social media for years other than some for work now. And all of this has been something I didn't want to lose my freedom. I saw that, but a lot of people don't get that. So in your book, Screen Strong Solutions, How to Free Your Child from Addictive Screen Habits, you really lay out 7 steps in your book. And it goes from everywhere from preparing yourself for what's to come to the importance of teaching life skills, replacing what's been lost. Can you walk through a little bit of those 7 steps to help people understand what they're getting if they pick up this book?
Yeah. And then also in the course is, again, it's an online course. It's wonderful. It dives in a lot deeper. But initially, the first thing you have to do is take your parenting hat off and put your coach's hat on, because you have to become a coach for your kids. And I'm just saying in general, regardless of if you're Screen Strong or not, we have to get away from this idea that that our kids need to run the show. This is a big problem. So if you are a coach and you have a losing season going on, you're not going to gather your team together and say, okay, everybody, let's just do what you want to do. Of course not. You're going to have more discipline. You're going to get back to the basics. And this is the first step when you start taking your kids' screens away. You have to get back to the basics. They have to start understanding what life is supposed to look like. And it's not 5 hours a day on Snapchat.
What it means to be bored for a minute, to be creative.
So this helps parents a lot. This is one little tip really helps to think, wait a minute, I am the coach and I'm going to, you know, make them run laps if they don't do their work or whatever. I mean, you know what I mean? You have to have that kind of an attitude. It can't be like, oh, I want to be my kid's best friends. You know, a good coach is loving, but they're also very strict. And that's what we have to be as parents. And interestingly enough, 40 years of research also supports this fact that firm but loving parenting styles really work. So after that, it's really important that you get some support. And some people struggle. They can't even find one other family to do this with them, but it goes a lot easier if you can find another few families that will say, hey, let's do the screen free thing for a month and let's see what happens. Our kids can play together. Oh my goodness. They discover so many things. They rediscover Legos, for example. I mean, we say that, you know, bring things into your children's life that you don't have to limit, right? So think about that. There are no parental controls on Legos. We don't have to set the kitchen timer for Legos. So we want to bring in things that make our kids sweat and that make them use their imagination, get them outside, get them to move more. Of course, the outdoors really heals a lot of things. So after you gather support, then you have to do some preparation. You do have to sometime get some things in your house, get some board games, a basketball hoop. We have a list of things that really work. Then you got to remove the screens. And then you start rebuilding these life skills. So let me just tell you, really funny, when my kids were in third grade and we decided that we were going to have a game-free home. We're not screen-free, hear me, okay? We're just game-free and social media-free for the kids. They don't have smartphones. But I made a list of all the life skills that I wanted my kids to learn how to do. So the boys looked at it and they looked at me and they said, Mom, this is going to take us till we're 18 to learn how to do all these things. I said, yes, that's my job. That's
the list
point.
A few of what those might be.
Well, they in third grade, they started making their lunch every day for school. And so what that meant is that the night before, you know, this was kind of a big task. Like you might say, well, my kids can make their lunch, but can your third grader make his lunch 5 days a week? That's the kicker. They also learned how to do their laundry. And by fifth grade, they were doing all of their laundry. And
whoa.
Oh, we had some mishaps and we, you know, they came in from basketball and had to, you know, the next day they forgot to wash their uniform. So they had to wear the sweaty basketball uniform to school. Well, that only happened once. And then they thought, oh, I need to wash my clothes. So until this day, they are still doing all of their laundry. And that is getting it, washing it, drying it, folding it, and putting it away. So, you know, that takes some time. They do a lot of chores. Every time there's something broken in our house, one of the boys has to try to fix it first before we call anybody. I tell parents, you have everything you need right under your roof to raise healthy adults. As long as you can keep certain screens out of the way, they will thrive. And so what happens as a result of this, they become very confident and they become competent. And those are very important skills. You know, the human need to belong, to have autonomy, and to be, you know, good at what you do is what we're missing when we are launching our kids who have spent 10,000 hours on video games. They don't know how to do basic life skills. And it's not that we just want, you know, cheap labor around here, although it is really nice. We want them to learn how to actually do things in real life so they will feel good about themselves when they leave. So you want to replace that screen time with lots of other things and not just chores. You know, it's not all work, even though my boys don't mind hard work because we do a lot of things together as a family. But then the final step is to be very purposeful about reconnecting as a family. And I know that sounds kind of trite sometime when people kind of roll their eyes and they're like, okay, now we're talking and I feel guilty because I'm, you know, not doing enough of this. But if you don't make a goal, if you don't make a list, and if you don't really think about how you're going to do this, life has a way of just sweeping things by and you're not going to get there. And one of our biggest goals is that we always have dinner as much as we can in the evenings together as a family. Sometimes it's a little bit later because it's after a sports practice, but I fight for those dinners. And boy, are they, I think that is probably, you know, research says too, that families who actually sit down with no screens and talk during dinner. And our kids know about most every current issue out there. We actually get the newspaper, the actual newspaper gets delivered to our house, and they read a ton. There's so many things I could go into. Like I said, the course coming out is going to be so helpful. We have part two coming out in January with all the solutions and hundreds of tips.
ScreenStrong.com, right? ScreenStrong.com. Melanie Hemp, thank you so much for joining us, Melanie. We're going to post links on social media as well as in the show notes for today. Take back your kids from the digital world. Free your kids from addictive screen habits. Melanie's book is Screen Strong Solution. You can find her work at ScreenStrong.com. Thank you for everything you're doing to help parents take back their families, take back their kids, build confidence, skills, freedom, and more. We'll be right back here on Trending.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
It is the first week of Advent. Yesterday here on Trending, I unpacked more of the meaning behind the Advent wreath. And kicking off this first week of Advent, what does that first candle, that first purple candle during Advent represent? It represents hope. In this Advent season of preparation for the coming of Christ, that is, in celebrating Christmas, coming at the end times, his second coming, but also the coming that we'll meet him at our particular judgment when we die or in receiving him in the Eucharist. So there's preparation and penance this Advent. And hope is at the heart of this first week. It's something that is being offered for us to meditate upon. Now, we know that hope is one of the three theological virtues. That's why it's so important that we pray for this virtue. But let's unpack this a little bit more. Living a hope-filled life is, as I briefly touched on yesterday, it's living a life of a pilgrim. It's a matter of understanding that when we look around, we understand that this world is not what we're created for. We still have to come into our full essence and existence of who and what we are, and we'll only discover that before God, in God, through a heavenly orientation. This is the context necessary for our life in order for us to have hope. That is what gives us hope. To understand we are not made for this world. You may have seen it's a very common bumper sticker that a lot of Protestants put on their cars. N-O-T-W, not of this world. It's an important reminder that I enjoy seeing from time to time, because it reminds us to be inspired in our life to grow, to have that heavenly orientation. You see, hope is a virtue of being in a state of on the way, pilgrims here on earth. You see, it's an actual acknowledgement of the human condition that we are indeed experiencing, one that could lead to an existential crisis if not understood within the correct context. It would lead to an existential crisis because we haven't fully come into understanding our essence and existence apart from a life fully alive, rooted in God in heaven. This is why we should have this understanding in our day-to-day life that this isn't what I'm made for. That is to just stay here on earth. I'm made for a life rooted in God. That Jesus Christ came, and by his body, blood, soul, and divinity, the incarnation, his life, death, and resurrection, he has helped me to understand that I am created for so much more. And we forget that we're created from nothing and we're made for something. Yet for some reason, we want to stay in this void of nothingness, and we are missing the importance of a hope-filled understanding of fulfillment in God. You see, the three theological virtues are faith, hope, and love. But faith and hope are no longer necessary in heaven because we fully attained the completion, the perfection of ourselves as human beings when and if we make it to heaven with God. You see, our state on earth must be lived out in the virtue of hope. Understanding, that is, that we're beings who are on their way, but not yet there. So this existential crisis demands hope, or else we will indeed despair. I think that this is often what we see in today's culture. From anxiety, depression, loneliness, suicidality. So many of the challenges that we experience, at the heart of it, we see despair, hopelessness. But we have to be hope-filled, hope-centered. This existential crisis can get the best of us if we do not keep the correct orientation and context day in and day out. The philosopher Joseph Pieper discusses how our creatureliness, that is, you know, being a creature here on earth with the ability to die, with the need to live according to our nature in order to thrive, this creatureliness he refers to as a not yet existing being. That is, that we're not fully in our total complete existence. We're in a pilgrim state, looking for this full realization of our essence and existence that will be discovered in heaven. This is why hope is so important. And this is why we have to understand that hope is not blind optimism. It's not risk-taking or chance or luck. It's understanding and being at peace with our pilgrim state in life. And therefore, that means proper orientation and striving for God. This means that we're striving to live a life of virtue. That we're striving to live in a state of grace. Because we have hope within us. And what is that hope? It's God. It's that we will fully understand ourselves. We will fully understand others. We will fully be able to love perfectly others. Do you ever get upset with yourself because you recognize that we do indeed love imperfectly? Wanting things our way. Wanting to be able to feel good because of how another person makes us feel. I see this all the time in marriage. It's easy to, you know, nitpick and want things done a certain way. Or have certain expectations, and that is the point when we'll show greater love or greater generosity or gentleness. You see, the challenges that we experience here on earth are a reminder of the creature and the creator, the dependence on God, that we are fully alive when we're living to the fullness of the vision that God has for us, what he intended for us. And what he intended for us is for you and I to be with him. This is why I love this first week of Advent, actually pondering what the Advent wreath means, what that first candle represents in the virtue of hope, bringing hope back into our lives. We've talked about how so many of the themes in Advent center around light. Coming into the darkness, Jesus Christ is that light. Are we willing? Are we paying attention? Are we able to receive him? This is why this Advent season is one of preparation and penance. Let the hope and light of Christ truly transform your life. Transform the day-to-day, the moment-to-moment interactions. The church has carved aside this very special season for you and I. 4 weeks, when the church carves this time out in its liturgical calendar, we should listen, especially when there are 4 whole weeks. Take this as a time of preparation and penance. Allow this time to be an opportunity to grow you. Pray for the virtue of hope as we unpack all week long here on Trending what it means to live a hope-filled life. And remember that it's a theological virtue. It's an absolute gift from God. So as we try to understand and ponder and read and study and listen to Trending, listening to how we unpack this virtue of hope, make sure that you're praying for this gift. God will surely give it to you. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. I'll be back with you tomorrow as we approach the first day of hearings of Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health that may overturn Roe versus Wade at the Supreme Court. I'll be back with you tomorrow. This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray. Starting December 1st, that is Wednesday, we'll start to see the Supreme Court hear the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health case. This may be what will overturn Roe versus Wade and return the issue back to the states. So join me Wednesday as we discuss this important case. It's also Gentleman's Hour. We'll be talking about what keeps you up at night versus what keeps women up. Join me daily at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.